Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. What is the American dream? Historian and writer James Truslow Adams actually invented the phrase American dream in 1931, his book Epic of America. He wrote, "The American dream is that dream of a land in which life should be better and richer and fuller for everyone, with opportunity for each according to ability or achievement. It is a difficult dream for the European upper classes to interpret adequately, and too many of us ourselves have grown weary and mistrustful of it." Of course, this was during the Great Depression that he wrote this. "It is not a dream of motor cars and high wages merely, but a dream of social order in which each man and woman shall be able to attain to the fullest stature of which they are innately capable, and be recognized by others for what they are, regardless of the fortuitous circumstances of birth. The American dream that has lured tens of millions of all nations to our shores in the past century has not been a dream of material plenty, though that doubtlessly counted heavy. It has been a dream of being able to grow to fullest development as a man and woman, unhampered by the barriers which had slowly been erected in the older civilizations, unrepressed by social orders which had developed for the benefit of classes rather than for the simple human being of any and every class." The definition of the American dream by the guy who invented the word. Joseph Farah is with us. He is the American author, journalist, and editor-in-chief of the conservative website WorldNetDaily.com. And Joseph, first of all, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tom. Just want to take issue with you there on one little thing, conservative website. It's the leading independent news site on the Internet, and I've been on your show before, and I personally reject that conservative label. I'll call you what you like to be called, and I just appreciate the same courtesy.
I will pass that along to Sean, my producer, who writes up the liners that I read. Yes, my apologies, Joseph, and you're right. You have been on the show before, and you have said that, and I should have remembered. In any case, on World Net Daily, you are number one calling for... in this piece you wrote titled "Pray Obama Fails," you say nowhere in the Bible does it suggest that evil rulers must be obeyed. I would just parenthetically suggest that you read Matthew 21:17. Secondly, in a more recent piece here, is the American dream dead? No, I'm sorry. Wanted, Americans willing to fight back. You talk about this legislation, this economic stimulus bill, this jobs bill, and you say the American dream is dead. The question, can it be restored? I think the problem is that we have different definitions of the American dream. What's your definition?
Well, I kind of like the definition that you provided there in the opener. It was a tinge too materialistic for me, but, I think that's fairly on track. When I think of the term American dream, it harkens recollections of de Tocqueville's writings on his time in early America, what he saw. And one of the things that he witnessed was the fact that early America was by nature a very devout country, which was, even then, an experience that was somewhat different from what he knew in Europe. And I think that that is at the heart of the American dream. Our American people today, still, even though in this, post-Christian era, are more faithful than people in Europe. And I think
well,
that's
you know,
the root.
I've actually read Democracy in America by de Tocqueville. I suspect most people have not. And, you know, it was the bestseller for the first half of the 19th century. It was the best-selling book in America and continues. It's been continuously in print ever since. And
hey, Tom, you want to hear something interesting about Democracy in America?
Sure.
Do you know there was an earlier version with a different title?
No, I didn't know that.
And it was called America, the American Republic. And for some reason, I don't know if it was de Tocqueville or publishers decided to change it to Democracy, which I found fascinating.
Yeah, he spent 6 months here in 1936, as, or 1836, as I recall, and then went back to France and wrote it. But most of the book, actually, he notes in passing the frequent religious fervor of Americans, but most of the book is devoted to economics. Most of the book is devoted to his perception of America as an egalitarian society and as a society where there aren't the thing that amazes him is that there is not an aristocracy and that America is so anti-aristocratic. And this is where I'm concerned that, you know, what we have seen under 28 years now of Reaganomics, essentially continuous. I would say that many of Bill Clinton's policies were also Reaganomics, arguably even most of them.
Do you think we'll ever get over it, Tom? How many?
I really
how many
don't.
Centuries,
what
how many
seeing,
centuries will it take?
Well, this is the problem. What we saw, was this rise from after the Civil War, from Reconstruction until 1929. We saw a rise of a wealthy elite, the robber baron class, very very powerful rise, and a crash, a real significant crash of the American middle class, which by that time, by the way, was largely farmers. And which led to things like the Grange movement, the progressive movement, and the populist revolt, and the union movement, and the Haymarket riots, and all this kind of thing. And then from 1933, with the election of Roosevelt, until the early 80s, we saw the reverse. We saw a rise in the American middle class and a decrease in the mega wealthy, in the wealth of the mega wealthy. And then since Reagan, we've seen again the explosion of the mega wealthy. We are now a more rigidified structure, social structure, economic structure, and social structure in the United States than any other industrialized country, even than in England, and more rigidified than we ever have been. In other words, a child born in poverty in the United States right now is more likely to remain in poverty throughout their entire life than in any other industrialized country in the world, even England, and more so than at any other time in the history of the United States. And somebody born into great wealth is more likely to remain in great wealth throughout their lives and their children's lives than any other time
in
the history.
Well, you can make
that
statement.
That's not the
But there's no evidence to suggest that. Where is your statistical evidence to support that? It defies everything I've ever read in my entire life. And with regard to Roosevelt, you're switching gears here pretty quickly, so I'm going to try to keep up with you. What evidence did you see of the growth of the middle class prior to the end of World War II? There wasn't any growth in the middle class during Roosevelt's entire administration.
Actually, for when Roosevelt came into office in the teeth of the Republican Great Depression, you had millions of people homeless. You had people sleeping in shacks. You had people, you know, one of the leading causes of death among elderly people was freezing in the winter and starvation in the summer. You had an absolute disaster. We had 25% unemployment. By 1939, 1940, he had that down to 10% unemployment, and there was a middle class emerging in the United States. And I would say that by the 1950s,
it was As long as you continue to try to blame everything bad that happens on Republicans and everything good that happens in America, you credit the Democrats. I think you're going to be, the ones I like to look for common ground, as I know you do. And the common ground that we share is that the Great Depression was caused by robber barons. And, they didn't have any political party allegiance. They own both parties in this country still, to a great extent. And, let's, if this is going to be a Democrat-Republican debate, you got the wrong guy because I'm not here to apologize for Republicans.
Well, I'd say that Roosevelt took those guys on. He challenged the economic royalists of his day, and he did so loudly. He called them out on it.
Uh-huh.
But, in any case, I'm not trying to make this partisan. Frankly, I would just be as comfortable saying conservative or liberal. But in the minute we have left, we're talking with Joseph Farah, the American author, journalist, and editor-in-chief of WorldNetDaily.com. it seems to me, Joseph, that the American dream is dying in large part because of this rigidity. And if we want to strengthen it, that we need to do more of what Obama is talking about doing, which is creating a social safety net so that people feel free to take the risks of entrepreneurship, because they know if they fall, there is a national health care system that will
show me a place, point to a place somewhere, anywhere, time in the history of the world where that idea has worked.
It's working right now in Europe, in Northern Europe, and has been for 50 years.
Well, much of Europe is dismantling what you refer to as a social safety net.
Not Northern Europe.
What I refer to as, socialism light.
Not
Northern
Europe.
It doesn't work.
It's working fine in Sweden.
It's the thing that resulted in this economy collapsing in this country. It will do it every time, 100% of the time.
Well, I agree with you that a lot of the countries in Europe are following Maggie Thatcher, and they're experiencing the same disaster we are. But, well, we'll have to leave it at that. Joseph, you made your point well, and people can read all about it over at worldnetdaily.com. Thanks for dropping by.
Thank you, Tom. God bless.
Good talking with you. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You know, it's not pleasant to talk about, but it's one thing that every man over the age of 30 should know about, an enlarged prostate. Prostate enlargement can cause frequent urination and even sexual problems. So between getting up in the middle of the night to urinate and possible sexual problems, an enlarged prostate becomes a giant pain in the... Well, you get the idea. Now, what if I told you there was an all-natural way to help your body keep your prostate healthy? There is. It's called Beta Prostate, and it's an all-natural prostate vitamin. No crazy medications with strange side effects, just a natural supplement that helps maintain your prostate. Beta Prostate has proven ingredients that target and feed your prostate with healthy nutrients. If you're over the age of 30, be proactive in keeping your prostate in good health. Try Beta Prostate risk-free. Call 1-800-954-0803. That's 1-800-954-0803. Your health is too important to wait, so call now, 1-800-954-0803. That's 1-800-954-0803. They're just changing. And see, this is the problem. We have these dueling visions of what America is, what America has been, and what America should become. And the traditional liberal vision of America, going back to the founding of this country, and as Exhibit A, I suggest that you read Thomas Paine's The Rights of Man, and among other writings, Jefferson's writing. I mean, there's just no shortage of them, but particularly Thomas Paine or Harvey Kay's brilliant history of the founding of this country, Thomas Paine and the Promise of America. The traditional liberal vision has been that we are a nation of middle class. We are a nation where everybody has that basic, that the common welfare is provided for, that life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness are provided for by government, that is the reason why we establish government. Not to get into the business of business, but rather to make sure that the commons is protected. And the definition, I think, you know, the major area where conservatives and liberals are departing is the definition of the commons, frankly. Is life included in the commons in as much as it includes things like national health care? Does the commons include our currency and therefore arguably our banking system? And this is one of those areas where it's really interesting over the years, the debate. You know, Jefferson started out being a strong opponent of a national banking system. Alexander Hamilton, a strong proponent of it. Alexander Hamilton won the day, and that national banking system failed twice before the Civil War. But then Lincoln brought it back. And as Barack Obama pointed out in his speech, last week on Lincoln's birthday, he said, Lincoln brought us a national currency. And now you've got conservative Republicans out there saying, well, maybe we should federalize the Fed. Maybe the Treasury Department should buy the Fed. I think a fine idea. See, there are some things that transcend Republican, Democratic, some things that transcend politics. But unfortunately, not enough. This morning, every Wednesday morning at 5:30, I am rolled out of bed by a phone call from Jay Marvin on our affiliate in Denver, AM760 Progressive Talk, and Jay Marvin does the morning show there. Great guy, and I just come on and we kick around the issues of the day. And he played a clip for me this morning of a local host in Denver who was going off on Barack Obama's being there in Denver yesterday, which is what got this guy started. And his name is Sean Rima. And this is just incredible. Listen to this.
Just
this
our Obamatons, the zombies. You see them and that look in their eye, that hopey, changey look. They're like the Manson family. You know what I mean? Remember that Manson? Maybe Squeaky Fromm, you know, and it, with that look in her eye, like, oh, I'm so happy. We'll be on the heels of Barry coming to town. See, Kyle, Barry coming to town. Well, it's very Nuremberg-y, isn't it? I know I got a guy on line three that disagrees with me on the Nazi corollary there that I have been making in regards to the cult of personality, that is the phenomenon of Barry living in Barryland. But it is very Nuremberg-y. The inauguration was very Nuremberg-y. People weren't screaming change. People weren't screaming hope. They were screaming Obama, Obama.
See, okay, this is the riff of the right. And you know, clearly poor Sean doesn't understand history and has never probably watched Leni Riefenstahl's brilliant propaganda documentary. It was commissioned by Hitler. About the Nuremberg rallies, and probably doesn't realize that it was at the Nuremberg rallies that Rudolf Hess introduced the word homeland to the German people. Introduced the word homeland.
Dank Ihrer Führung wird Deutschland sein Ziel erreichen, Heimat zu sein.
Heimat zu sein, the homeland. Yeah, that was Nuremberg.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Rachel Maddow here, and I want to talk to you about healthier, younger-looking skin. In America, we literally have thousands of products that help enhance our appearance, some better than others. Most carry a big price tag, but deliver only minimal results. In large part, that's due to useless filler ingredients that simply increase the company's profit margin. That's why educated consumers are a retailer's worst nightmare in this field. You can shop smarter. You can purchase products that have proven ingredients, like retinol, and glycolic acid, and vitamin C. These key ingredients are found in Dr. Arthur Perry's Night Skin Serum. It's formulated with the most effective amounts of anti-aging components. Night Skin helps enhance natural collagen production. It reduces fine lines, and it fights brown spots. You simply apply a little bit before bed, and you're done. That's it. Night Skin is convenient, it's affordable, and best of all, it is risk-free if you dial 1-800-491-8335. That's 1-800-491-8335. Again, that number, it's 1-800-491-8335.
Of all the things I think about every day, stroke wasn't one of them. Then my brother, who always took care of himself, had one. I was telling my doctor that he said 4 out of 5 people who have a stroke never show symptoms. And he said 80% of strokes can be prevented when identified early. So I decided to get screened by Lifeline Screening. In about an hour, Lifeline Screening did a series of non-invasive screenings using sonograms to look inside my arteries and determine my risk for stroke and heart disease.
If you're over 50, Lifeline Screening has screening packages that can help detect the warning signs, so you can prevent a stroke and heart disease from happening to you.
When I got the results, I went to my doctor who developed a treatment plan. Now, I know I'm doing the right things to keep healthy.
Lifeline Screening's community health screenings are coming to your neighborhood. Appointments are limited. Make yours now. Call 888-912-TEST. That's 888-912-TEST. 888-912-TEST.
We'll be right back.
34 minutes past the hour. Welcome back to the True People's Radio, the Tom Hartman Program. Well, what do you do if you're a small-time crook and you've just bought a radio station? You buy another radio station, and then a TV station, and then another TV station, and then a newspaper, and you start building your empire. And you buy another radio station, then you buy a radio network, then you buy the other radio network, then you buy another TV network, and then you buy the other TV network, and pretty soon you own over 90% of all the media in the country. Your name is Silvio Berlusconi. The country is Italy. And what do? You run for prime minister, and of course you win. But eventually the small-time crook part that I started out with catches up with you. Yesterday, David Mills was sentenced to 4.5 years in jail for taking a bribe from Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi to give false evidence in corruption trials. Mills, 64, was convicted by a court in Milan at the end of a 3-year trial on charges of accepting the $600,000 payment from the politician and media tycoon. Said Mills, "I am naturally very disappointed by this verdict." Berlusconi seems to have passed legislation which will cause him not to be convictable, because the first legislation which may not stick was the equivalent of executive privilege. The second was the statute of limitations. So we'll see. Kevin in Chicago. Hey, Kevin, welcome to the show.
How you doing, Tom? I just wanted to bring up a quick thing about Ireland. If you noticed, Fox TV and also McCain during the first debate with Obama brought up how low their taxes are. I lived there for a short while when I was in college. I was a bartender out there. But they have free college. And not only is it free, but they get a small stipend to go to college.
Yeah.
It's a Catholic country. They have free health care. They have a dole system, which is not means tested. Virtually anyone gets the dole. All you have to do is just lose your job and boom, you get the dole and it doesn't run out. They have virtually no homelessness. Very little crime. They have no military spending. I don't see why they don't bring that up.
Yeah, it's a highly socialized country by the definition of the conservatives. Absolutely. Well said, Kevin. Thank you very much. See, this is the dueling vision, and this is, you know, the reason why I played this crazy right-wing wacko from Denver and the clip from the Nuremberg trials, Mr. Hess, was that he was going off about how Obama is very Nuremberg-like, and the fact of the matter is that whenever the progressive or liberal or traditionally American vision of America as a nation of the middle class, whenever that's brought up, when Roosevelt campaigned on that and pushed that, when Teddy Roosevelt, for that matter, pushed that as a Republican, he was attacked, as was Franklin Roosevelt. As was, frankly, even Dwight Eisenhower by many Republicans during the day for supporting Social Security and supporting a 91% top marginal tax rate. Whenever these things happen, the far right, the fringe right, calls it socialism and they get all freaked out. Or they call it Nazism. They say it's National Socialism. And it's not. It's Americanism. It's creating an America that works. Dave in Grandy, Massachusetts. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Hi, Tom. It's good to talk to you. I think they also call that class warfare.
It's exactly what it is. And what the problem is that you can't have small-d democracy or you can't have a functioning democratic republic without a three-class society. Ideally, we'd even have it go to two classes by getting rid of the poor, that is to say, making everybody middle class. But generally speaking, a three-class society, poor, rich, and a middle class in the middle that's large. And we are increasingly moving toward a two-class society like England was in the 19th and 18th and 19th centuries, where you basically have the poor and you have the rich, and that's it. They have very, very small middle class, maybe the occasional shop owner, but that's it.
But listening to that guy on the talk radio show, I'm surprised that Godwin's Law doesn't apply to talk radio. I don't know if you're familiar with what that is. But
I'm not.
In blogging, Godwin's Law means that the first person on a blog thread who introduces comparisons to Nazis or Hitler automatically loses the argument.
Oh,
because it's so cheap and mindless.
Yeah, it's and usually it is, and usually it is. Well said. Thank you very much, Dave, for the call. I appreciate it. Armin in Florida. Hey, Armin.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
The thing that I can't understand when you debate some of these people that are in opposition to your philosophical view and views about economics to the degree that you are, like this Joseph Ferreira. I read a lot of his stuff when I can, and he's right on a lot of things, but he leaves out what I think he's wrong about that can many times be more significant than what he's right about. And that's how they massage the nuances that people that don't understand what's ensuing get taken advantage of and get perplexed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
For example.
And
For example.
Well, like when he was having this debate with you. Okay, you brought the point up time and time and time again, and I wish I'd have been there because I would have tapped you on the shoulder and says, Tom, tell them about this great healthcare system we have. Okay, in the 50s and 60s, yeah. The reason that our healthcare was so good back then is because it was, number one, it was non-for-profit, and number two, this country, probably when we had the best middle class in the 50s and 60s, you got to understand that the ruling elite had to contend with the Soviet Union, and the Soviet Union making inroads with communism globally, so they had a competitor. When we lost that competitor in 91, they didn't have any competition anymore. Then they just sold out the middle class that they used for 30 or 40 years to take down full-blown communism, which I don't necessarily agree with. But, I mean, we're just pawns. We're just pawns.
You make a good point, Armin. And in fact, we're seeing the same thing right now with Chavez. Here's Chavez in Hugo Chavez in Venezuela just got this constitutional referendum passed that stripped from the Constitution term limits for the presidency. Now, we didn't have term limits in the United States presidency until, what was it, the 60s or 70s? And, in fact, the Republicans wanted to do away with it when Reagan was president so that he could run for a third term. And it was the Republicans who put it into place because they were so horrified by the fact that Franklin Roosevelt got reelected got elected once and reelected three times to four consecutive four-year terms as president. And it just totally flipped out the Republicans. Roosevelt died in office. And so Hugo Chavez is saying, you know, let's take the Constitution in Venezuela back to like the way it was in the American Constitution was envisioned by the founders of the American Revolution, who did not want term limits to be in the Constitution. And everybody goes, oh, Chavez, he's trying to make himself dictator for life. No, he's just doing away with term limits. So if the people want him to continue, he can continue. And frankly, I think the term limits, even at the level of the presidency, are a mistake. But that's, you know, that's a whole other thing here in the United States as well. I would argue that we should do the same thing. But the point that Armin makes is a good point, and that is that the opposition to Chavez is that he is providing a strong social safety net and reducing poverty in Venezuela. And he's using the natural resources of the country, the oil by and large, to do it. They're also some of the mineral natural resources. He's nationalized those things. Whereas here in this country, the oil and the other mineral resources, with the singular exception of the state of Alaska, the money from those resources goes to a small group of very wealthy, largely men, and the corporations that they can control. In Alaska, of course, they figured out a way to skim some of that money off the top. So Alaska is probably the most socialist of our states. It's the most Chavez-like of all of our states. Ironically, Sarah Palin, the governor there, who thinks that system is just fine, thank you very much. You could say that Sarah Palin is Hugo Chavez in the United States in many regards. But, you know, that's the point. That's the point that we don't have that competition. But I would say that we do have the example, Armin. I would say that France, Germany, England, you know, of course, went in the toilet with Margaret Thatcher and never got out. And they're suffering for it right now. They went down the same road with Thatcher that we went down with Reagan. In fact, Thatcher pioneered that road a couple of years before Reagan became president, and he just followed her. And it's been a disaster for the UK. It's been a disaster for us. But most of the rest of the year of Europe said, no, thanks. We're not going to do that. And they're doing just fine. Thank you very much. Max in St. Louis, Missouri. Hey Max. What's
on your mind? Yes, good morning. I want to talk about, I could tell you about my state, but I've heard it's happening in other states where you have Republican-controlled houses and senates or whatever they call their state reps. In my state of Missouri, we have a Speaker of the House up in Jefferson City who says that the federal government should keep its stimulus package. They should send it on back to Washington.
Yeah, Bobby Jindal is talking about that for Louisiana, too.
Yeah, he's the one. Yes, that's where I heard it. Bobby Jindal down in Louisiana has said the same thing. Now, I don't know if my guy, I say with tongue firmly implanted in cheek, I don't know if my clown is going to codify this. It's just something he's been saying in the House.
Yeah.
And
they talk a good
of...
line, Max, but they're going to take the money when it comes.
They're well, of course. Well, I will tell you right now. Of course, we have a Democrat for governor for the first time in 4 years.
Yeah.
And yesterday, within minutes after the president signing the bill, he was there for the signing of a contract and the work that began on a bridge outstate Missouri, yeah, as they say.
Yep.
So yeah, they're going to town with it.
Yeah, it's interesting though, Max. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. It's interesting to hear these cons say, "Oh, we don't want to take that money. I mean, that's socialist money. That's tainted money. We wouldn't want to do that. We'll run up a $10 trillion debt, but we don't want to take that money. No." Yeah.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
The hardest part of any home improvement project is finding a good quality contractor, somebody who's going to do the job right, complete it on time and within budget, and not going to hassle you. So who do you call? Who do you trust when you need a plumber, a painter, an electrician? I'll tell you who to call. Like me, call Angie's List. Before we signed up for Angie's List, we had a disaster contractor install a kitchen counter. We used Angie's List to find a handyman to show up and fix everything. They really came through for us. More than 650,000 homeowners nationwide use Angie's List for ratings and reviews on more than 300 service categories, even doctors. It's a word-of-mouth network for consumers. Angie's List is a growing collection of homeowners' real-life experiences with local service companies. Now the people who join Angie's List, they're like you. They're looking for a way to find trustworthy companies that perform high-quality work. To join Angie's List, go to AngiesList.com and eliminate the fear of hiring the wrong company. I joined Angie's List, and you should, too, today at AngiesList.com. 1-888-888-LIST. 888-888-LIST.
paradise I find that sets me loose. I'm the truth. It's a place out on the ocean. It's a mansion with a view. But all that I can think about is you.
9.5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, helping you win the water cooler wars. Our program brought to you in part by the Teamsters, proud supporters of the Employee Free Choice Act, Teamster.org, their website. Tony in Maryland. Hey, Tony, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tom. Going back to the Nuremberg-like masses of Obama's followers, isn't there a story in the Bible where Jesus is preaching to a large crowd that had grown so large that it was pressing him and his followers, and they had to take a boat and put it just offshore into the Sea of Galilee and preach from the boat?
It's Matthew 5 through 11 or 12. It's the Sermon on the Mount.
Wasn't that Nuremberg? I mean, was that Nuremberg-like? And I just want to say, it isn't the crowd. It's the message.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. Well said, Tony. Thank you very much. It is the message. And the message is a good one. I think it's a good and healthy one, in fact. Chuck in Michigan. Hey, Chuck, what's up? Chuck?
Hello?
You're on the air.
Oh, yeah. Hi, Tom. Chuck, I'm a union carpenter out of Detroit Local 687.
Good on you, Chuck. What's up?
Well, I wouldn't normally get the chance to talk to you because I would normally be working, but 2 weeks ago I joined the ranks of the unemployed.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Well, my comment is that what's going on currently with the Big Three and the UAW is, I think, a dream come true for most Republicans. This is what they've pushed for decades, to eliminate the unions.
Yeah, they want to force these companies into bankruptcy so they can void the union contracts.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. They have absolutely no problem with taking all of these retirees and just throwing them under the bus just so they can get rid of the union.
Yep. Yep.
And it's been that way for decades. It's amazing to me how anyone, any working class person, could ever vote for a Republican, because that is the overall plan.
Well, that's why the Republicans have to use things like abortion and guns and gays and speak about nothing but that in order to get working class votes. Because go ahead.
They have to divide us.
They
have to find the wedge issues to get us to fight amongst ourselves rather than to stand united. And that's what unions and the Democratic Party is all about, is being united and working together.
Yeah, very well said, Chuck. Thank you very much for the call, and thanks for listening to WDTW there in Detroit. Morgan in Bend, Oregon. Hey, Morgan.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to say, first off, that I'm a big fan of your books. I've read a couple of them, and I think they're really well written.
Thank you.
And I'm calling because I couldn't get through yesterday, but the talk about population control, I wanted to ask you a question. Why is it that I'm a single man without any children? I don't ever plan on either getting married or reproducing. That's a choice, free choice, pro-choice. Mm-hmm. Why do I not get the tax incentives that a married couple with five kids get for being bunny rabbits?
You don't, because there was a time in this country when the tax code was being written when we wanted to encourage people to have babies, and I think that time is long past, and we should do away with those deductions. But that's the simple answer, Morgan, because there was a time when that was considered a high value.
Okay, great. So, thanks, Tom.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the call. George in North Hollywood. Hey, George.
Hey. I'd like to say that term limits that Venezuela got rid of are racist to their core.
Because
they prevent individuals from taking part in the political process. And when you don't have individuals being able to, or prevent, they limit. When they are limited, then what takes the place is institutions such as lobbyists or political parties who hire people to prolong their administrations.
No, you're absolutely right, and I think most Americans don't understand this.
Got here in this country. That's what's wrong with our system.
Right. When you have term limits in a political system, there has to be an institutional memory. And typically the institutional memory are those people without term limits, are those people who are elected over and over and over again from their districts, and they're the institutional memory. When you have term limits and everybody gets bounced out every 6 or 8 or 10 years or whatever the term limits are, then the institutional memory shifts away from elected officials and into the hands of things like lobbyists. And that's, you know, the other point is that with term limits, that means that the only people who can afford to run for political office are those who can afford securely to take a few years out of their life, run for political office, serve, and then know that they're going to get bounced back out again when they get term limited out. And as a consequence, you end up with just the wealthy elite running for political office.
But also not just political office, but the whole economy, the whole economic system favors those who are more institutionally oriented than those who are individuals. You've got to have, in order to play, you have to pay big time.
Yeah.
If you want to have 8 kids, if you got enough money, then you're not persecuted.
Excellent point, George. I got it. Gareth in Linden, Washington. Hey, Gareth, got a minute before the break. What's up?
Hey, Tom, long time first. My quick one is just that now that we've passed the stimulus and we're looking at the TARP program for the toxic assets, my question is why aren't we getting the banks involved in this instead of rewarding them for having made, you know, a bunch of money off the fees and then collecting, you know, their loan payments for years and now these things are off? Why don't we see about getting those people back inside there? If the houses were over-assessed to begin with, reassess them at a current level, get them in at a good rate, get them inside there, and then talk about compensating the bank possibly for some of the difference. You know,
I think we need to do what Franklin Roosevelt did, and that is create a federal agency that simply goes to the bank and says, okay, we're buying this this mortgage from you, and then renegotiates with the homeowner and says, you know, because back in the 30s, most mortgages were 5-year balloon mortgages, and they were a disaster when the Depression hit, just like the ARM mortgages are. That says, okay, we now own the mortgage, and you can pay us over a 30- or 20-year period at a reasonable rate of interest, and, you know, just redo the entire thing. And with regard to the banks themselves, I agree with the Republican Lindsey Graham and Alan Greenspan, who are saying maybe it's time to nationalize the banks.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Experience it and win with Tempur-Pedic. If you've been waiting for the absolute best time to try a life-changing Tempur-Pedic Swedish sleep system, this is it. Visit a participating retail store today and get your game piece for a chance to win $10,000 just for trying a Tempur-Pedic mattress. Simply call, click, or visit a participating retailer near you today to find out how. Call 1-800-433-2720 or visit Tempur-Pedic.com/experience. That's 1-800-433-2720 or Tempur-Pedic.com/experience. For official rules, go to www.experienceitandwin.com. Contest ends 3809. Offer void where prohibited.
President Barack Obama, a new leader, a new vision, a national call to action. MSNBC follows Barack Obama from Inauguration Day through the first 100 days. Understand the challenges we face and the change he will bring. Weekdays with Keith Olbermann, Chris Matthews, Rachel Maddow, and Joe Scarborough. The first 100 days on MSNBC, the place for politics.
Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
To the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you for the second hour of our show. Dan Gaynor on the line with us, the Vice President and T. Boone Pickens Fellow at the Business and Media Institute, businessandmedia.org. Dan, you realize T. Boone Pickens made an awful lot of his money by buying up companies, inflicting an enormous amount of debt on them, firing huge chunks of their workforces, and, you know, stripping the assets out of the companies and then reselling them. Are you sure you want that association?
Boone Pickens is a very famous and very successful businessman. If you've got issues about his business practices, you should try to get him on board.
He's been on the show.
Yeah. I'm lucky to that, you know, and we're lucky that he's a nice supporter of ours. And,
okay. All right.
Yeah.
Well, that's, you know, I just wanted to make sure you knew. You know, now he's a proponent of wind energy, and, you know, that's a nice thing. But although he seems to own a lot of water under the land that he wants the government to nationalize and give to him. But in any case, the fairness doctrine is the topic of your most recent, or actually your boss, Brent Bozell's most recent screed, yet another liberal seeking a return of the censorship doctrine. And let me just say right up front, Dan, as somebody who worked in radio during the time that the fairness doctrine was in place, my first job in radio was when I was 17 years old. I got a job as a DJ on a country western station, WITL. WITL, AM and FM, Lansing, Michigan, I was a DJ for a couple of years. I did Top 40. I did overnight album cuts. And then for 7 years, I did news. And for a year, I was a program director. And so I worked for five different radio stations during those 10 years. And we had at Whittle, the 7 years that I did news, we had a daily talk show on that station. It was one of the three owners of the station, Chuck Drake, was his air name, who did the show. And I participated in producing that show to the extent that, you know, booking people and things, because I was part of the news department. And that was during the Fairness Doctrine. And we never thought twice about the Fairness Doctrine. I mean, you know, the Fairness Doctrine to us simply meant that the radio station had to have a good, healthy, strong news department, that we in the news department were barred from talking to the sales department. In fact, we could get fired for talking to the sales guys. And that, you know, to the extent that it was reasonable around election time, the station tried to get all of the various politicians who were running for political office on the air. What's wrong with that?
Well, what's wrong with it is when it's government mandated. You of all people, Tom, and I'm very disappointed in you. For one thing, we may disagree on a lot of things, but I expect you to be four square against government mandates about speech. And that's what this comes down to. There are only a couple reasons why you could ever vaguely rationalize your position. And I mean, the first.
Well, I don't think you know my position, Dan.
Yeah, no, but I mean, the first is some sort of scarcity argument. We have more media out there now than we've ever had, not just in our lifetimes, but in the history of the planet. We have, you know, thousands of radio stations, thousands of newspapers. We had 10 different cable channels every day. You've got internet. You can look at any news source you want any time of the day. So if people decide for business reasons that they want to pursue one side or the other, I don't see anything wrong with that.
Dan, let me just be on the record here, first of all. I don't want anybody working in the government. I don't want some government employee, nor do I frankly want a corporate employee, but I don't want a government employee listening to my show and saying, oh, he fits into this category, therefore he has to go on that radio station at this time. I don't want that. You know, first of all, I'm not sure that I'm any easier to categorize than Michael Savage. I think that, you know, who spent the better part of the last 2 years on the radio trashing George W. Bush at every opportunity loudly. Does that make him a liberal? I don't know. It's like, you know, so I'm very concerned about this straw man that you guys have been throwing out. What you guys are calling the Fairness Doctrine never was the Fairness Doctrine. And I don't know of anybody in this business, including the people who are being quoted as saying that they're in favor of looking at something like a fairness doctrine, you know, Bill Clinton's recent comment, for example, who are suggesting anything like the straw man that you guys are all hysterical about.
We're all hysterical because, let's see, a former president, two senators, and a former governor who's now attorney general, Jerry Brown, who in like a week have come out and said that they want to do this. What do they all have in common? They all have D's after their name. Let's see. Who historically abused the Fairness Doctrine to curtail political speech? That would be Democrats.
No, that I would say that would be big corporations and Republicans.
No, it would be Lyndon Johnson and John F. Kennedy. Those campaigns, you go back in the 60s, the Fairness Doctrine was used and abused for political gain.
Oh, come on, Dan.
Oh,
like I said, I was on the air back during that time, and there was no such thing going on.
Of course there was. This is not me. You've probably seen the movie Good Night, Good Luck. You're a good history guy for media stuff. You remember Fred Friendly.
Fred Friendly wrote about this.
Fred Friendly was in TV.
Yeah, but he specifically talked about...
There was no fairness doctrine for TV.
But he wrote an article about this back in the 70s talking about how the fairness doctrine was abused by Nixon, by Kennedy.
Well, because one guy wrote an article about it, doesn't make it so. But Dan, let's even say, let's even say that that was the case. The fact of the matter is that nothing like that is going to happen. That's not what people are talking about. What people are talking about is programming in the public interest. And how does it serve the public interest that you can get in your car in New York and you can drive all the way to Los Angeles, all the way across the United States, pretty much any route you want to take, and that trip is going to take you 35, 40 hours. And out of that 35, 40 hours of that driving of that trip, you're going to, or 50 hours if you drive the speed limit probably, maybe more than that, you're going to maybe for 2 or 3 hours of that entire trip be able to hear anything other, in terms of talk radio, anything other than screaming right-wingers. How does that serve the public interest?
That's a fantasy, Tom. See, what happens is the left doesn't consider NPR to be liberal, even the right, we know it is.
NPR is not allowed to have an opinion, Dan. You will not hear somebody on NPR calling out any politicians for their political positions. You will not hear talk radio, political talk radio on NPR. It doesn't exist.
You will hear 800 stations of NPR doing political spin on issues by the topics they choose, by the people they choose to interview, and my tax dollars go to it, and I hate it. NPR should, if it can survive in the public sector, then it should be not publicly funded. But my tax dollars go to this. It's government-controlled media. There should not be such a thing.
That's an entirely different debate. We can come back some other time and debate whether or not public radio should exist in the United States. What you're suggesting is that commercial radio. I'm suggesting to you that commercial corporate for-profit companies that are using the public airwaves have an obligation to use those public airwaves in a way that serves the public good. And how does it serve the public good that when a town has a toxic spill as a train car goes through it and they need to get on the air and warn people that there's chlorine gas coming down the streets and there's nobody at any of the radio stations because they're all owned by out-of-state corporations, how does that serve the public good? How does it serve the public good that the only talk you can hear on AM radio from coast to coast is screaming right-wingers? Screaming right-wingers have every right to be on the air. In fact, I think there's some very entertaining radio on the right. Rush Limbaugh is a very talented guy, and I have a lot of respect for him as a talented guy. Michael Savage is even more talented, and I have a lot of respect for him as a talented radio professional. I hate their positions. I respect their radio talent, and they should be on the air. But so should I. So should the other voices on the left. And right now, there's essentially a lockout.
The problem you've got, Tom, on the left is that Air America and such haven't been successful for one big reason. While it's successful in some markets and great, because, I mean, look, I come on here. I'm happy to see you're doing well. But while it's successful in some markets, people are saturated by liberal media. They get liberal media on TV.
Not on radio. Dan, this show has beat Rush Limbaugh in Portland. We beat Rush Limbaugh in Seattle. We beat Bill O'Reilly 2-1 in Los Angeles. We beat these guys in markets all around the country. We were pulling in great ratings in San Diego, and they pulled it off and put on a sports format that was getting a fifth of the ratings. You know why? Because the company owns the sports network. They can make more money running that. That's a decision that's about money, not about the public interest.
It's a business. They're supposed to make money.
It's a business that is using the public airwaves.
This public airways argument is bogus. The public can get information. 7% of the people in this country rely on radio to get their news.
What percentage of people driving in their cars are relying on radio for information, Dan?
And then what about all the people get news on the internet or in print or in TV?
As they're driving around town?
Anybody makes
zero.
Sure that they're not liberal. But they're all liberal. So what happens is talk radio, the conservative talk radio, has done well because, frankly, conservatives didn't have any other outlets to turn to.
Well,
because the media control,
it's an interesting theory.
All the other media outlets.
So you think that Joseph Farah with WorldNet Daily, he's got no readers?
By comparison to, let's see, the New York Times or the Washington Post, yeah, no.
Okay, all right. Well, point taken. Dan Gaynor, businessandmedia.org. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you. Take care.
We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi, Tom Hartman here. Now, I want to talk to you about gold. Gold is real money, and it's been real money for over 5,000 years. Yes, there will be fluctuations in the price of gold, but gold will still be real money when the dollar is just a footnote in history. That's why I began buying gold years ago, and now I acquire gold and silver coins through ITM Trading. You can call ITM, too, at 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. There may be rumors of a strong dollar policy or rallies that send the dollar higher for a short time, but in my humble opinion, the long-term future for the dollar is very uncertain. That's why some nations don't even want U.S. dollars today. That's why I'm buying gold for the long term. So call my friends at ITM Trading and talk to their experts. They'll answer your questions and send you a free information packet about owning gold to get you started. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. It's really very simple. Just talk to the experts at ITM Trading. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. 1-888-OWN-GOLD. Helping you win the water cooler wars, Tom Hartman here with you.
Baby, take off your coat. Real slow.
Yeah, it has to do with wedgies.
Baby, take off your shoes. I'll take your shoes.
and Headlock.
Baby, take off your dress. Yes, yes, yes. You can't leave your hat on.
Well, here's what happened. Yvonne Morris, quick thinking. She was a technician at the Brickyard Animal Hospital in Salt Lake City. She saw a guy breaking into a coworker's car. She tried to grab him. She tried to tackle him. He kept squirming away. His boxer shorts were sticking out of the top of his jeans. She grabbed them and gave him the world's most painful wedgie and had the guy just moaning on the ground. How to take down a burglar with a wedgie. Congratulations, Yvonne. Well done. The police arrived and hauled him off. Still whimpering about wedgies. Whenever we talk about the Fairness Doctrine, it brings out a lot of conversation in a whole lot of areas. And one of the areas that I'm just letting you know in advance, I don't want to get into, is the programming of any of, is A, comments on any particular radio shows. You know, all right, you know, I hate this, I like that, this person's a bozo, you know, that kind of thing. It's really not germane to the conversation, A, and B, I don't want to be commenting on other people's radio shows. And secondly, occasionally people want to call in and complain about their local radio station or, you know, talk about the future of their station or some other station or whatever. Please don't do that on, you know, in this context. If we're going to talk about this topic, let's keep it in the abstract and in the big picture, rather than, you know, rag on any particular company or any particular radio station. That will not be a productive conversation, and I will stop it, because it's that is where we get into the circular firing squad, and it ain't useful, bottom line. Sean in Fort Lauderdale. Hey, Sean, what's on your mind today?
Yes, Tom. I wanted to mention the fact that Jimmy Carter was the one that split up the ITT back then when he was the president, because
it was AT&T, actually. But yeah, you're right. He broke up AT&T, and it actually increased shareholder value when he did it.
You know, what I'm thinking about is just you got this huge, monumental organization right now. They have control over the media and everything else. And I think it's unfair to the rest of us, because we have a one-way talk going on all the time, and I mean it, and we are being brainwashed. That's why people make the stupidest decisions. I mean, electing someone purely on a basis of some particular thing you might dislike, because people are hammering on you throughout, you know, and everywhere on the paper, television, radio. So at what point are we going to have a fair shake, you know?
Well, and that's a good question, Sean, and you raise a good question. And frankly, I think that, you know, ownership does have something to do with it, and that we should be looking at how the rules were, and there's virtually no discussion of this these days, how the rules were with regard to how many radio, television stations, and newspapers an individual corporation can own in individual markets or across the country. Those rules were very different in the early 1980s, before Reagan came in, or the late 1970s, from where they are today. And as a result, there was much more local media. And I think that, frankly, media was a much more thriving and healthy world back then than it is right now. And you know, I know a lot of people in corporate media who would agree with that. So, you know, it's... Anyway. Steve in Mountain View, California. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Hey, Tom, usually I agree with you, but there was a comment made a little earlier about... how you shouldn't have any kind of tax deductions or awards for people who raise children.
Right.
And I'd like to point out that people who take that attitude may find themselves wondering where they're going to get all their workers and their garbage men and their policemen and their firemen.
Well, it's not
and
that, Steve. What's going to happen is that the cost of those things will go up slightly. What happens when population declines is not that work doesn't get done. It's that the cost of labor goes up. And historically, if you look at countries where the labor force has diminished, what happens is that the middle class gets stronger because the average wages go up. That's what happens.
I misunderstand my point. My point is that the expense of raising those children was incurred by their parents.
Right.
And those parents foot the bill for basically doing the work of replacing the people in the country. So
right.
I don't think it's appropriate to call people who have children in this country people who like to act like bunnies.
Well, yeah. I mean, as speaking as a parent myself, I never thought of myself as a bunny. But,
yeah, I mean, having children, if we just, none of us had any children in 100 years, there wouldn't be anybody left, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, there is to be something to be said for breeders, but there is also something to be said for the non-breeders among us. And,
sure.
And I'm not sure that those people who choose not to have children should be at a tax disadvantage over those people who have children. On the other hand, your point is, you know, that it costs money to raise children. It's right. It's true. What I would like to see is, instead of saying we're going to give a tax break to people who have children, period, like, you know, here, isn't it wonderful, you're having children, have some money, let's make sure that those children grow up to be productive by taking that money and putting it into our public schools and giving free college education to our kids. That's the way to do it.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Of all the things I think about every day, stroke wasn't one of them. Then my brother, who always took care of himself, had one. I was telling my doctor, and he said 4 out of 5 people who have a stroke never show symptoms. And he said 80% of strokes can be prevented when identified early. So I decided to get screened by Lifeline Screening. In about an hour, Lifeline Screening did a series of non-invasive screenings using sonograms to look inside my arteries and determine my risk for stroke and heart disease.
If you're over 50... Lifeline Screening has screening packages that can help detect the warning signs, so you can prevent a stroke and heart disease from happening to you.
When I got the results, I went to my doctor, who developed a treatment plan. Now, I know I'm doing the right things to keep healthy.
Lifeline Screening's community health screenings are coming to your neighborhood. Appointments are limited. Make yours now. Call 888-912-TEST. That's 888-912-TEST. 888-912-TEST.
You've heard me talking about Dr. Arthur Perry's revolutionary anti-aging serum called Night Skin. I'm truly fascinated how the main ingredients, retinol propionate, glycolic acid, and vitamin C, interact with each other to reduce fine lines and wrinkles. It even helps to eliminate unwanted dark spots. I did some research on the cosmetic medical profession and uncovered something interesting. It turns out that every person ages in their own unique way because the face is composed of several fatty tissue compartments that are affected by gravity in different ways. This is a major medical breakthrough uncovered recently, and it's changing the outlook on how doctors treat aging. Dr. Perry's Night Skin formula can be used to treat your entire face or just target troubled areas. It was specifically developed to safely tighten and tone your skin. Night Skin is convenient, affordable, and results are visible in less than a week. You can try Night Skin today risk-free by dialing 1-800-491-8335. That's 1-800-491-8335. Night Skin, the newest breakthrough in anti-aging. Call 1-800-491-8335.
Thank you.
Let me just toss this out to my listeners. Given that we have some of the smartest listeners on the entire planet Earth, I have been looking for some time for a copy of the old so-called Fairness Doctrine. Now, I can find Section 315 of the original Broadcast Act of, what was it, 1927 or 29, whatever it was. And Section 315 says that, you know, stations have the program in the public interest, and it provides an exemption from political balance to news. So, you know, if a Republican makes news, they don't have to go out and get a Democrat to say what he has to say about it. So it provides an exemption. And I can find, you know, the Red Lion Supreme Court case. There's been a couple of Supreme Court cases. I've got those. But the actual Fairness Doctrine itself, I have been unsuccessful in tracking down the actual language. And I'm not even sure that there was actual language. I think it might have been an interpretation, a posture that was held by the FCC until Reagan ordered them to change the posture because he reconfigured the FCC with regard to Section 315. But if somebody has that information and wants to send me a link on it, I would much appreciate it. My email address is on our website at tomhartmann.com. It's Tom, T-H-O-M, at tomhartmann.com. And in the subject field, so it doesn't get caught by my rather aggressive spam filters, just put to Tom about the Fairness Doctrine when you found it. Please, you know, not comments about it, but the actual it itself. I would love to see. Jim in Burbank, California. Hey, Jim, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Hi, everybody. I'd like to know if this Fairness Doctrine would reduce the amount of infomercials, or as I call them, commerce shows, that we currently hear on the air.
It's a good question. Actually, Joseph Farah over at World Ant Daily, one of his op-eds was that the Fairness Doctrine would do away with Christian programming. And one of the reasons why is because much Christian programming, I'm not sure if he laid this out as the reason why, but much Christian programming, I would say probably 95% of it, is actually paid programming. They go to a radio station and they say, how much for an hour of time? The radio station says, we'll sell you the hour for $300. They put their show on for an hour, and in the show they beg for money, and they track it back to the radio station. And if they make more than $300 an hour from that radio station and asking for money or selling their prayer cloths or whatever, like Jimmy Swaggart used to do, then they continue broadcasting on that station. And that's how Pat Robertson made $1 billion. That's how, you know, Tammy Faye and Jimmy did it. And
I'm sorry.
So you know, and now you got infomercials for, you know,
commerce shows.
Yeah, you know, everything from herbal products to vitamins to you know, the local financial advisor. I honestly don't know, Jim. I just don't know where it would go. Not sure. Greg in Fort Lauderdale. Hey, Greg.
Yeah, you could hear the desperation in your guest's voice as he was defending the Fairness Doctrine. And the reason for this, Tom, is that they're gearing up their audience, their 100 million dupes, the army which took over and wrecked the United States. They're gearing them up, programming them Pavlovian style, so that the minute this is brought up, it will spin them back up into the kind of juggernaut that impeached Clinton.
Yeah, although let me suggest that you're exaggerating the size of their audience. The audience of conservative talk radio is probably
100 million. At its peak, it was believed to be 100 million of probably the dumbest people on the planet.
Well, the people
who... But there is a way that this can be avoided. The Fairness Doctrine issue, we can avoid walking into that trap baited by red herring.
Well,
and
no,
it is
it's going to still be there. No, Greg, I get your point. The trap is still going to be there. They're going to get their message out one way or another. B, they're not going to go away. They're making money for their radio stations, and I'm not suggesting that they should go away. And although I am suggesting that, you know, if we can demonstrate a business model that works, let's put us on some good sized sticks on some good sized radio stations and make some money for the stations. But the audience for conservative talk radio. I mean, Limbaugh is claiming the 6 million figure. I would say broadly, probably maybe 20 million people in America listen to conservative talk radio at one time or another on any given day, and that's a pretty huge number, actually. But you know, it's not 100 million people. Ray in Salt Lake City. Hey, Ray, what's up?
Hi. Three things, actually. Two of them involving a guest you just had on. I missed the first part because I was at war on the phone with Social Security. But he was saying something about public radio being leftish and being funded by the government. Ever since Nixon, all the money that public radio got from the government is a little seed money. They go out and they beg for money from the audience four or five times a year.
And from big corporations.
NPR
did the investigative reporting that caused Archer Daniel Midland, ADM, to have to pay a $300 million fine, which at that time was the largest fine in the history of the country for price fixing. And within a year or so, NPR was no longer doing investigative reporting, and ADM was a regular sponsor.
Interesting.
Yeah.
The other thing about that call, that guy you talked to, or your guest or caller, whatever, the business, I'm listening on the internet. I'm in Salt Lake City. I lived in L.A. for 17 years. My job was eliminated, and they sent me up here. And I used to listen on KTLK. I haven't been able to listen to you or Stephanie or Randy or Rachel or any of those people until 2 weeks ago when I finally retired. And now I'm able to listen on the internet. And if I leave the house, that's it. You're gone. I can't listen in the car. I can't do it any other way. I have to be at my computer in order to hear you. And I just don't think that that's quite right. It's about a three-state area here, from here, Idaho, into Montana, most of Nevada, where I can't listen to anything except Rash Limburger and people like that.
Yeah, well, you can listen to us in Missoula, Montana, but other than that, yeah, you're right, Ray. And there's something wrong with that. Just broadly speaking, and it's not just me talking about my show. I just think that there's something broadly wrong with that. That is not programming in the public interest.
No, not at all. Oh, and finally, I can't give you a link about the fairness doctrine, but here's a place that you can take another look that might help out. My memory, such as it is, back in 1961, when Jack Kennedy appointed Newton Minow as the chair of the Federal Communications Commission, it was Minow who started talking in terms not only of the vast wasteland of TV, but of getting editorial comments on the radio. And up until then, there was commentary, but it was not of a nature that would take one side or the other politically. At that time, the way I remember it, editorials started appearing on the radio where somebody from the station would give a point of view on an issue, and they would have to give equal time to a listener or somebody from an organization who wanted to come on there and give an opposing view.
Right. Radio stations were doing what newspapers have been doing forever, which is saying, here's our editorial opinion, and by the way, here's what our readers or our listeners, in the case of radio, have to say about
that.
Yeah,
but until 61, I don't think that was going on, or at least I certainly don't remember it.
Yeah. Well,
it wasn't until Newton Minow came on board. And it was something that you just said, too, that the fairness doctrine might not have been something on paper. It might have been something that was just a position taken by the FCC.
Yeah, I've been unable to find it. I've had three debates now with conservatives over the last year on this topic, and every time I've asked them to say, actually, I didn't explicitly ask Joseph to. I'm going to have to send him an email, but I've asked them to send me this fairness doctrine that they're talking about, and they've never been able to do it, and that's why there's this giant straw man out there on the other side that everybody's always talking about. But Ray, your comments are well said and well taken. Thank you very much for listening to us, and thanks for taking the time to give us a call. Speaking of K-Talk, Joe in Woodland Hills is listening on that station. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Well, they're against the fairness doctrine because they have all this propaganda that they're feeding the public, and they're distorting the facts, omitting some facts in order to distort them, and nobody's refuting what they say. That's what they're afraid of. When Sean Hannity says they're going to take away our radio station, he means, and people don't understand it, that they're going to take away his truth.
Yeah.
His lies.
Well, or be able to rebut them. I said, I don't. First of all, the so-called fairness doctrine that the cons are putting out is a straw man. Nobody that I know of. I mean, there might be a few folks, you know, way out there, but nobody that I know, any serious political figure or anybody seriously in the radio industry, is advocating anything like having the FCC listen to every show and decide whether it's liberal or conservative and assign it to radio stations.
No,
and that's,
but I think
and that's what the conservatives are saying. That
the facts
know.
Instead of just starting them to enhance their position.
Right. They're afraid that there's going to be a rebuttal of their distortions. You're absolutely right. And one of their distortions is their distortion of what the Fairness Doctrine might be, which is pretty amazing. Bonnie in Pennsylvania, got a minute to the break. Bonnie, what's up?
Well, I think your last guest genuinely believes his own shit, but the message is very disingenuous. First of all, let's not forget about all the religious radio stations, all right-wing out there. Mm-hmm. And as an aside, because I like MSNBC at 8 and 9 p.m. and Link TV and Current TV, I pay a very high premium for DirecTV in return for those three commercial choices. Unfortunately, I get at least 20 religious right stations in it, too, plus fake news. Moreover, I'd like to say that radio is very personal. We can talk back to it,
yep.
And that's something that you can't do to TV or PBS or NPR.
Yeah, well said. Bonnie, thank you very much for calling and for listening. A longtime listener there in Pennsylvania, and always nice to hear from you. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, and now a pause to stimulate the economy. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Who's ready to hear some fun facts about GEICO? All right, let's give it a go, shall we? First, over 3 million drivers switched to GEICO last year. Second, GEICO received a customer satisfaction rate of 97%. Third, GEICO has been providing car insurance for over 70 years.
Whoa, hold up a tick. These aren't fun facts at all. These are financially sound facts. We've been duped.
GEICO. 15 minutes could save you hundreds on car insurance.
President Barack Obama. A new leader. A new vision. A national call to action. MSNBC follows Barack Obama from Inauguration Day through the first 100 days. Understand the challenges we face and the change he will bring. Weekdays with Keith Olbermann, Chris Matthews, Rachel Maddow, and Joe Scarborough. The first 100 days on MSNBC, the place for politics.
your salvation from preachers, kings, or masters. The people hold the power. Arise and claim your freedom. The wealthy enjoy services only at your acquiescence. Only while you stay in darkness. Arise, arise, arise. International.
Oh, wouldn't that be nice? 9.5 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Talk radio for the sane among us.
Trailers for sale or rent.
Yep, I'm hitting the road.
Rooms to let 50 cents. No phone, no pool, no pets. But I ain't got no cigarettes.
Nah, I gave those up. I'll be at CPAC in Washington, D.C., February 26th and 27th. On March 7th, on Saturday, I'll be in Seattle. This is the three-hour cruise with Talk 1090, and you can get information on that over at am1090seattle.com. On Thursday, March 19th, I'll be in Chicago debating Michael Medved. This and please show up. We need people cheering for our side. You can get tickets over at Chicago's ProgressiveTalk.com, and all the revenue from this, by the way, goes to cover the expenses and to support the radio station. I'm taking not a penny from it and proud of it. And Friday and Saturday in Denver, Colorado, the Green Festival. Actually, Saturday I'll be speaking. This is May 2nd in Denver. I will be one of the keynote speakers. You can get that information over at greenfestivals.org/Denver. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service on the line with us from Washington, D.C., TalkRadioNews.com. Hey, Ellen, what's going on?
Well, first of all, let me give you the bad economic news, and then I will go to the Gitmo news, and then I'll talk about the housing issues. Housing starts are down very badly in January, 16.8%, and they had expected a drop. The economists had expected a drop of 4.9%. And you're going to see this in this next thing. The Federal Reserve reports this morning that industrial production fell 1.8% in January, steeper than the 1.5% drop expected by economists. And so December's original reported drop of 2% was actually revised downwards to 2.4% in industrial production. So what we're seeing is economists are giving us figures, but they're not relevant.
Yeah. Well, this is, I've been saying this on this show for some time, that with all of this unemployment, it takes 6 months to a year for unemployment, as the unemployment figures have been skyrocketing over the last 18 months. It takes 6 months to a year for those numbers to translate into the numbers that you just shared with me, because it takes that long for people to max out their credit cards, wipe out the equity in their home, run out their life savings and realize that they can't get another job right now. And then they declare bankruptcy. Then they get kicked out of their home. Then their home gets foreclosed. Then they lose access to their credit cards and they stop buying things. And that's when these numbers start showing up. And we're still seeing unemployment rising right now very rapidly. So this is going to continue to get worse.
Year left.
Yeah, it's going to continue to get worse for, until we see unemployment start not just going down, but we actually see employment starting to go up dramatically. Once you see that, 12 months later, you're going to see a turnaround in things like housing starts and industrial production.
I don't disagree, but it's going to be a while.
Yeah, and that's the thing that most Americans don't get. And this is what the Republicans are counting on, by the way. They understand what I just said.
Oh, midterm elections.
Yeah, exactly. And so they know it's going to be tough in 2010, no matter what is done today. I mean, he could have dropped $5 trillion on the United States and carpet bombed the country with money, and it would still take a year and a half for it to show up. And that's, by the way, by coincidence, when the midterm elections are happening.
Exactly. And that's my fear of midterm elections. The other thing is that today there was a ruling by the district court, the D.C. Circuit Court, about Guantanamo. And what they're saying is they cannot force political branches, Congress and the president, to admit aliens into the country. Now, this was a case of the Chinese Muslims who are at Guantanamo. They said if they returned them to China, they would probably be tortured. And so then they were to be released on the lower court into the United States. But the D.C. District Court of Appeals said there's a long line of precedent saying that admission of aliens is a decision for the political branches. Now, there was a minority. There were two judges that voted not to release these guys into the United States from Guantanamo. Both of them were George Herbert Walker Bush, Bush 1's appointees. And then there was a Judith Rogers. She's a Clinton appointee. She voted to continue the detention for now to give the president a chance to provide other justifications for detention. You might want to get my brother Michael on. It is the Center for Constitutional Rights case, as I understand it.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, Sean's on it. Thank you.
Okay. Then the president today unveiled his $75 billion mortgage relief plan. He said, you know, he gave a lot of the sort of standard people work hard, play by the rules, et cetera. He said that what they're hoping to do is that, first of all, Fannie and Freddie are generally not permitted to guarantee refinancing for mortgages valued at more than 80% of a home's worth.
Right.
But that they want to change this restriction on Fannie and Freddie so that they can refinance those mortgages. Okay. Also, they want to give lenders incentives to refinance by doing things like modifying the terms of subprime loans. He said they make up only 12% of all mortgages, but account for roughly half of foreclosures. Also, what they want to do is they want to reduce payments for anybody who pays 31% of a borrower's income. Now, I think that is pre-tax income, but I have not been able to get a check on that. And then they want to provide $200 billion from the Department of Treasury to ensure that Fannie and Freddie can continue to stabilize mortgages and hold the rates
down.
This is a
great program, Ellen. How much of this is requiring legislation versus things that he can simply do by fiat?
Well, that's unclear, but it looks like, in terms of the legislation, there was a statement from Nancy Pelosi saying that the Judiciary Committee, through John Conyers, is going to reform the bankruptcy laws so that some of this can take place and that judges can begin to make decisions.
That's absolutely great. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Thanks for the update and the insights, Ellen.
Thank you.
And for the tip, we'll get in touch with your brother about the Guantanamo case. Coming up in the next hour, Will Bunch. He's going to tell us about the Reagan myth. Stick around. This is fascinating.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Tom Hartman here. You've heard me talk a lot about the special men's vitamin called Beta Prostate. I keep bringing it up because every single man listening should take care of their prostate health. When you're younger, your prostate gland is about the size of a walnut, but as you grow older, it can swell up to the size of a lemon. This could mean getting up at night for bathroom trips, difficulty urinating, even sexual dysfunction. So you got to see your doctor for checkups and take Beta Prostate every day. Not too long ago, we invited the formulator of Beta Prostate, research chemist Roger Mason, on my show. He told us that prostate problems are a growing epidemic, and statistics say that 3/4 of all American men will eventually have prostate problems. And now Roger Mason will be extending his special offer, buy two, get one free. And he's even throwing in his book, The Natural Prostate Cure, for free, plus a money-back guarantee. Call 1-800-954-0803. 0803. That's 1-800-954-0803. Call now because this is an amazing value. 1-800-954-0803. That's 1-800-954-0803. Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Much of the political debate that we have been discussing all day, welcome back to our third hour, by the way, Tom Hartman here with you. Much of the political debate that we've been discussing has to do with, or has its roots in, the bursting upon the scene of Ronald Reagan. Had the hostages not been taken in Iran, and had they not been kept under some very suspicious circumstances, Jimmy Carter was way ahead of Ronald Reagan in the polls in the election of 1980. And Reagan was widely viewed as that crackpot right-winger, much like Barry Goldwater had been, a crackpot right-winger from California. But the hostages took down Carter, and Reagan came in and fundamentally changed this country in ways that we are seeing played out right now in our economic crises. That's not the myth, though, that has been built around Ronald Reagan. Will Bunch is on the line with us. He's the author of a new book, a brilliant new book, Tear Down This Myth, the subtitle, How the Reagan Legacy Has Distorted Our Politics and Haunts Our Future. Will Bunch, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tom. Thanks so much. Thanks for the kind words.
And thanks for coming on. And Attitude, by the way, attitood.com, the website to check this out. Of course, you know, buy it at your local bookstore or online bookstore, wherever you choose. Tear down this myth. First of all, Will, give us an overview of the Reagan myth. What is it and how did it come about?
Well, it really has its roots in the 1990s, kind of at the heyday of the Clinton presidency, right after Clinton had just won an overwhelming, almost landslide re-election victory over Bob Dole. The conservative movement in this country really was at a low ebb. You know, the whole Newt Gingrich contract with America thing hadn't really worked out. Clinton was popular, and more importantly, you know, the policies that we saw during the 1990s of bringing the federal budget back into balance, and tackling urban problems such as crime, by putting more cops on the streets, and everything was really clicking on all four cylinders.
And if I can interject, these were all repudiations of Reagan's policies. These were policies that had been embraced by U.S. presidents from Roosevelt through Carter continuously, including Republicans like Nixon and Eisenhower. And Reagan started rolling these things back. Carter was putting them back into place, repudiating that. Do I have that right?
Right. Right. And then we had an unrolling back of Reagan. You know, when Clinton passed his economic program in 93, kind of shades of what we're going through now with Obama. But people forget that Time magazine actually had a picture of Ronald Reagan on the cover upside down, you know, with the headline Undoing Reaganomics. I mean, this was everybody in the early 90s was writing about how Reaganomics had been a failure. And, thank God we've undone the damage caused by a record amount of federal debt and the other fiscal excesses of the Reagan era, and we have things back on track.
Right.
And that mood was, you know, was endangering. You had a conservative movement that people who had come to Washington really during the Reagan Revolution, who thought they were at this vanguard of this movement that was going to be in power for decades, and that they saw it all vanishing up in smoke in the mid-90s. Grover
right.
Norquist was really the leader of this movement. And they had nothing. They didn't have a charismatic leader, a leader who had the kind of appeal that Reagan had to some voters, and they didn't have an idea. So they did a couple things in the late mid-90s. One was they started something called the Ronald Reagan Legacy Project, which was this audacious plan to go around the country and try and get something named for Reagan in every one of the 3,067 counties in America. Obviously, that hasn't been 100% successful, but it's been much more successful than you would have imagined without it. And they tried to tear down – they couldn't tear down Bill Clinton's policies so much, so they tore down his personality with the Lewinsky scandal. So and it was very successful, you know, in the sense that, they encouraged Republican candidates going into 2000 to model themselves after Reagan, and George W. Bush bought into it lock, stock, and barrel. And what he became, you know, he kind of advertised himself as Reagan's disciple. He said he would appoint Supreme Court justices like Reagan's appointees, Antonin Scalia, and not like his own father's appointees. In trying to become this mythologized Reagan, I argue in the book, Tear Down This Myth, that, you know, the crew that we had the last 8 years did more damage using the Reagan myth probably than Reagan himself did, even though I think Reagan himself had some disastrous policies as well. So
yeah, Reagan.
So that's the Reagan myth. I mean, that's why the myth is so important.
So, you know, other dimensions of the myth, though, Will, we're talking with Will Bunch. He's the author of this brilliant new book, Tear Down This Myth, How the Reagan Legacy Has Distorted Our Politics and Haunts Our Future. Attitude, attitood.com, the website. Will, there is this I think widespread belief among Americans and, you know, just your average American voters, the so-called Reagan Democrats in particular, that Reagan was anti-tax, pro-God, pro-family, and in favor of a balanced budget and a small government. And when you tell them Reagan was our first divorced president, Reagan didn't go to church. Reagan ran up the biggest federal deficit in the history of the nation, larger than every president from George Washington to Jimmy Carter combined, including all the wars that we fought. Reagan passed the largest tax increase in the history of the United States, I mean, to this day, and that more, well over 95% of that tax increase fell on people making less than $50,000 a year. You tell these people this, and they look at you with this glazed look in their face like, that can't be true. How did that come
to be? I mean, the media has played such a role in helping to convey this myth, and it's so overpowering, and it's, you know, it's backed up by these sound bites, you know, these tear down this wall and evil empire type sound bites that they play kind of on a tape loop over and over again.
Which is another myth. Excuse me, another myth that I'd like to toss in here and then let you riff off on all of them. And that is that Reagan bankrupted the Soviet Union. I remember back in the 1970s, before Reagan came into power, it was in the late 1970s, was the first time I visited East Germany. And at that time, and I was paying attention to this stuff, the CIA was reporting in 1979, or maybe it was 1980, I forget what year it was, the first year that I actually went into East Germany, and I had read these reports that the CIA was predicting that the Soviet Union and its satellite states, within a decade to two decades, would implode. And I visited that. I visited East Germany first, and then a year later I visited the Soviet Union, and I ended up working in Russia for quite a while. You know, back in the, what year would it have been? Well, anyhow, it was during the time of the very first elections. You know, when Zhirinovsky was running for election, and I was in Russia, and you could see it all around. I mean, anybody who ever visited that country knew that it was imploding. It had nothing to do with Reagan.
Tom, that's so funny because ironically, I actually visited the Soviet Union myself as a student in December of 1979, the exact same time. And you remember the way people were coming up to you, asking you to buy blue jeans, and they wanted cigarettes, and they wanted to talk English with you.
And the elevators in the hotels didn't work, and the food was terrible, and the service stunk, and you couldn't get a taxi, and the whole country was falling apart.
And the system was horrible, and you saw these women sweeping the streets because they had these make-work jobs, and it was really a disaster. And that's exactly it. I mean, the reason communism collapsed was because ultimately
it didn't
when
work.
The 80s came around, they coveted our computers. It wasn't because they were cowering from our tanks and missiles, but it was because they wanted our economic prosperity. And that's not the Reagan myth. I mean, the Reagan myth is that we brought freedom to the Soviet Union by spending billions of dollars on the Pentagon on weapons that, for the most part, didn't work.
Well, to the extent that they went bankrupt over military things, you could I suppose argue that Afghanistan had something to do with that. But the reality is that they just didn't. They were falling apart, and I it just boggles. Plus, the Soviet Union didn't even fall until after Reagan had left the office.
that's true. That's true. Also,
it was on Bush Senior's watch.
That doesn't stop conservatives from, I guess that's why they blame 9/11 on Clinton. I don't understand that whole philosophy either. But, you know, in your preamble, though, you mentioned so many things that are just accepted myths. I mean, the one that kills me is that Reagan shrank the size of government. I mean, you see Republicans every year on the campaign trail saying, you know, if the conservative movement's failed, we've gotten away from reducing the size of government the way Ronald Reagan did, except that he didn't. He dramatically increased spending. I mean, he took the United States from being a creditor nation to a debtor nation.
That's right.
And the size of the government payroll increased while he was president. He added a new cabinet agency, although it was a good one, Veterans Affairs. But none of that was shrinking government.
He blew the whole thing out. The Reagan myth is exactly 180 degrees opposite of the Reagan reality. And Will Bunch lays it out brilliantly in his book, Tear Down This Myth, How the Reagan Legacy Has Distorted Our Politics and Haunts Our Future. Highly recommended reading. Will Bunch, thanks for being with us today.
Oh, Tom, thanks so much for having me on.
My pleasure. And check it out, by the way, at attitude.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, this is Rachel Maddow. I'm a firm believer that age is just a number, but a little push in the right direction is always a bonus. That's why I had to find out more about this product called Night Skin. I spoke to some representatives from Night Skin, and I was taken aback by two things in particular. First, Night Skin was formulated by Dr. Arthur Perry. He's an award-winning plastic surgeon who's trained at Harvard and Cornell. Secondly, I was taken aback by how passionate the representatives were about Night Skin. It's clear that they stood behind this revolutionary product, and for good reason. Night Skin reduces fine lines and wrinkles and even dark spots that come with age. It has the most effective ingredients in the right doses that safely and effectively help to turn back the clock. Proven ingredients like retinol, glycolic acid, and vitamin C. You apply a little on your face before bed, and you're done. Night Skin's convenient, affordable, it easily accommodates anyone's lifestyle. Best of all, it's risk-free today. You can call to order your Night Skin by dialing 1-800-491-8335. Call 1-800-491-8335. That number again is 1-800-491-8335.
Nope, we are standing up saying we are Americans and we are taking our country back. Tom Hartman here with you. Larry Scott on the line, the founder, editor of VAWatchdog.org, the premier veterans site. VAWatchdog.org. Of course, the website, I guess I already said that, didn't I, Larry? Hey, welcome.
Am I again?
great to have you back with us, Larry.
Thank you.
What is the Ferris Doctrine?
The Ferris Doctrine is a 58-year-old doctrine. A gentleman by the name of Ferris was killed while on active duty. The family sued, went all the way to the Supreme Court, and 58 years ago, in very simple terms, the U.S. Supreme Court said active duty military members and families cannot sue the federal government for negligence or malpractices or get any type of damages or compensation for anything that happened to that service member while they were on active duty. You could have someone who was injured, okay, while they were on active duty, and they might end up getting disability payments, but they cannot sue for that, for any further compensation, if someone is killed while on active duty. Or insurance will cover them, but if it's a case of negligence, they can't sue. Most recently, this has come up in medical malpractice suits, where military physicians have misdiagnosed, and we find out now that there is absolutely no recourse for the family members.
Right.
But there's good news. We have a federal judge in California who has heard a Ferris Doctrine case, and he had to rule against the people, obviously, because that's the law of the land. But he's come out on record, and it's kind of an unusual statement, and he's telling the Supreme Court justices they have to readdress this issue. It is unfair. It is irrational. And it's time for them to take up the issue again and change, do away with the Ferris Doctrine.
That's interesting. So if a doctor commits malpractice in the private sector, you can sue him, but if he works for the VA, you can't.
No, for the military.
Oh, for the military.
Military. This only regards active duty military members and going after the military. Now,
let me make a case, actually, that would... I mean, you know, say you're in a battlefield theater and you've got a doctor who's doing his best and he's got, you know, incoming wounded like crazy and he makes a mistake. Do you really want that guy to be liable for malpractice prosecution?
Well, it's not the person. It would be the military service. It would be the Department of Defense. And that brings up a very good question. Do we want to go down that road? Either way you look at this, whether it stays or whether it changes, there are slippery slopes on both sides of the argument, Tom.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose you could make the argument, if you're not going after the individual doctor, then you could make the argument that particular military field hospital should have had more physicians.
That would be one of the arguments, but that's not a good argument the way the law stands right now.
Yeah, exactly. But that would argue in favor of changing the law.
You bet.
The record number of suicides now in our military, we're seeing this. This is a major problem. The Army is doing something about this?
Well, yeah, the Army has a suicide training, and for the first time ever, I'm sure you're familiar with the term stand down.
Yeah.
And the stand down in the military is where you stop what you're doing, and basically you go through either a rest and or a training exercise. And this was very common in battlefield areas where they would get guys out of the battlefield. They would stand down for a day or two just to catch their breath, get reorganized, and then go back out. For the first time ever, the Army this last Monday held an Army-wide, worldwide stand down for one day. Literally, the Army virtually stopped working for one day for an Army-wide stand-down for suicide prevention training. The Army is absolutely serious about this. They want to get the message out to the troops, and the message is this. There is help. Help is available. Don't keep it inside. Bring it to a superior. Bring it to a buddy. Bring it to the chaplain. Bring it to the psychiatrist or psychologist. But bring it to somebody and get help if you have suicidal thoughts.
You know, it's
an amazing thing.
In the private sector, Larry, there's widespread statistical evidence that the use of the SSRI drugs, the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, this new family of antidepressants, the Prozacs and Wellbutrins of the world, that they are so dramatically associated with increased levels of suicide that they're now black labeled, some of them, particularly in their application to kids. And a lot of these people in the military are basically kids, you know, 18 years old, 17 years old. Do you know if these drugs are being widely used among, you know, for PTSD or for battlefield stress? And if so, might that have something to do with this?
The answer is absolutely yes, Tom. These drugs are very widely used in the military. They are prescribed regularly. Sometimes you could even say they're overprescribed. We have many, many incidences of troops suffering depression perhaps fatigue, perhaps beginning signs, or at least some of the early symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder, being given these types of drugs and then sent back out into the field to do their duty, whether that is combat or non-combat related. The military is very aware of this as well, and they're looking at these drugs. There is no easy solution here. My hope would be that they continue research and get away from handing out these drugs like they're candy.
Yeah, because these drugs ultimately are, I mean, they don't call them addictive, but, boy, you read the literature, people have a hell of a time withdrawing from these things. In fact, they very rarely do. Usually people are put on them and they end up on them for life.
Yeah.
It's a tough one. Well, there's a lot more news over at VAWatchdog.org. We've really just done a short brush of it. So let me recommend to you, if you or a family member are a veteran or associated with veterans issues or care about veterans issues, which we all should, get over to VAWatchdog.org and check it out. Larry Scott, the editor and founder, thanks for being with us, Larry.
Thank you again, Tom.
Good talking with you. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
And now, a word from your dog about PetFoodDirect.com. He says you waste a lot of time and money schlepping. Yes, he said schlepping. To buy him food at the pet store. He says you could buy that same food from PetFoodDirect.com and save 20%. Not to mention the cost of gas, time, and schlepping home those big heavy bags from some store. You'll find 137 brands of pet food, guaranteed to save you time and money. PetFoodDirect.com has filled over 2 million orders in the past 10 years. That's 70 in dog years.
Visit PetFoodDirect.com and choose from 137 brands of pet food delivered right to your door. And today, save 20% on your order. Enter coupon code CAT at checkout. PetFoodDirect.com. Coupon code CAT.
Hi, Tom Hartman here. Now, I want to talk to you about gold. Gold is real money, and it's been real money for over 5,000 years. Yes, there will be fluctuations in the price of gold, but gold will still be real money when the dollar is just a footnote in history. That's why I began buying gold years ago, and now I acquire gold and silver coins through ITM Trading. You can call ITM, too, at 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. There may be rumors of a strong dollar policy or rallies that send the dollar higher for a short time, but in my humble opinion, the long-term future for the dollar is very uncertain. That's why some nations don't even want U.S. dollars today. That's why I'm buying gold for the long term. So call my friends at ITM Trading and talk to their experts. They'll answer your questions and send you a free information packet about owning gold to get you started. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. It's really very simple. Just talk to the experts at ITM Trading. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. 1-888-OWN-GOLD. 4 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Welcome back to our program. Taking back the mainstream media one station at a time, one show at a time, 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Starting in, 2 weeks? We're starting our seventh year on the air. Actually, we're in the middle of our seventh year on the air right now, if you include the few months that we did this show originally on a small local station in Burlington, Vermont. With the help of Bob Rowe, God bless him, the local station manager. Anyhow, Adam in New Haven, Connecticut. Hey, Adam, welcome to the show.
Hey, Tom, how are you? I'm a second-time caller, actually.
Okay.
I called
welcome back.
Like, Anyway, I just wanted to add a little comment about the Reagan's myth concerning his military spending and how it somehow, produced the result that the communism somehow collapsed. Basically, all this spending and all this unnecessary spending that he occurred during his presidency, all it did was made Eastern European people at large fearful and more distrustful of America, and it basically added fuel to the communist anti-American propaganda.
Yeah, I agree with that. Do you have first-hand knowledge of this, Adam?
Yes. Hello?
Yes. Do you have first-hand knowledge of this, Adam?
Yeah, I grew up in Poland.
Ah, okay. So you saw this.
Basically, I was a kid, but... But still, there was this, even, my parents were very politically active, and I definitely, and they were very anti-communist, and they wholeheartedly wanted communism to go away. But at the same time, there was this feeling of, America is going to be the first... They're going to be the first one to push the button, basically, because of the way we saw what was going on,
Because of the bellicose rhetoric of Ronald Reagan. I mean, here in this country, we refer to him as Ronald Reagan and depicted him as a cowboy, six shooters and the whole bit. And,
exactly.
So there was that perception in Eastern Europe as well. I'm curious, Adam, what your thoughts are or those of your relatives still in Poland about the Bush, George W. Bush, trying to put missiles on the Polish border that were allegedly to stop, bombs from, or missiles rather, from Iran. But I think the Russian government, Mr. Putin and Mr. Medvedev, are saying, no, these missiles are going to be pointed at us. The Poles and the Czechs find themselves in the middle of this. Or do I have this wrong?
I can't speak for them for my relatives back in Poland because I, rarely speak to them anymore. But, for me, it's very provocative. It's really like playing with fire.
Yeah.
By putting those missiles in
I
our
agree.
Area.
I agree.
But, and it's just, it's completely unnecessary. There is a segment of the population in Poland. Poland is a very nationalistic country, and they still remember, they're distrustful of Russia.
Right.
So there is a large segment of the population that is for it, but they just have like this nationalistic. It's for like completely ridiculous reasons, just nationalism and.
Yeah, the metaphor that I used to use back during the Reagan era was that Reagan and his I think there were two or three different presidents of the Soviet Union during his presidency, But, you know, Reagan and the folks on the other side were like two guys standing in a basement up to their ankles in gasoline, each one of them holding a book of matches and threatening to light it as both of them were pouring more gasoline into that basement. And, you know, it was starting to come up around their knees. And it's like this was the essence of mutually assured destruction, you know, Kissinger's beloved policy. And not just Kissinger's, but a whole generation's. Adam, I've got to move along, but thank you for sharing your insights with us. I appreciate it. Jeff in Denver. Hey, Jeff, what's on your mind today?
I called about a few points about Reagan, but I just got to mention something about SSRIs.
Mm-hmm.
Anxiety and depression can act as a warning and inhibitive mechanism that can be useful in preventing us from acting in certain ways.
Right.
And I just heard something yesterday that made me really think that SSRIs and anti-anxiety meds may remove those inhibitive mechanisms and we may lose the inhibitions that keep us from self-destructive and violent behavior.
That appears to be part of the mechanism that it has to do with why people commit suicide using these drugs and the larger issue of the people who commit homicide using these drugs.
Yes.
The vast majority of school shootings have been done by kids who were on SSRI drugs. And there's a concern that, yeah, it's a lack of inhibition. The other one is the lack of affect or the lack of empathy, rather, which is combined with lack of affect. These drugs muffle emotion and they muffle the ability to experience the emotions of others, which is sort of a chemically induced sociopathic state, you know. And so it's easy when you think of other people as cardboard cutouts in the world, not as real people, then the idea of killing them and going out in a blaze of glory becomes perhaps even attractive, certainly less repulsive than it does if you identify with them as people just like yourself.
Yeah. So anyway, about Reagan, those of us who are in the environmental and anti-war movement could saw through Reagan all the time.
Sure.
He was the biggest law-breaking administration. We're constantly suing him because his administration is breaking the law, and we kept winning because he was just simply breaking the law.
Yeah.
More people in his administration are convicted of felonies.
History.
When you dent your bumper, you can always, and it costs you $2,000 in a 2-mile-an-hour crash or 5-mile-an-hour crash, you can thank Reagan for lowering the safety standards of the bumpers.
Yep.
But the information of the Soviet Union, we could see through it at the time. We knew they had less missiles and less bombs. It was all a lie. We knew the economy was bad. But then Reagan also, he hid the debt. He was the one who started borrowing from Social Security money.
Right.
And hid the debt that way. He's the one who started the credit card funding of the federal government.
Yep.
And the other thing, as far as the Soviet Union, don't forget about Solidarity and Lech Walesa. That was a huge factor.
Yeah, in the fall of the Soviet Union. You're right. In fact, that was probably the tipping point more than anything else. Excellent points. Excellent points, Jeff, all of them. Thank you very much. Great to hear from you. Anna in Greeley, Colorado. Hey, Anna.
Hi. How you doing, Jeff? I'd like to make a couple of points, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
It's about saying that Ronald Reagan did this and did that. He didn't. He was already very sick, and they had run him four or five times before for president. Mm-hmm. And so they went in and made a deal with George Bush the first. And do you remember that was on television? You could see they were going in to make a deal so that he would be vice president and Reagan could be president for that period. And
well, I think for the second term, that was certainly the case. It was pretty apparent that Alzheimer's doesn't happen all at once.
No, it doesn't. And besides that, it was the Knights of Malta who ran the office. 8 Knights of Malta. Have you ever heard of them?
No.
Can I send you some material? This is material from Mother Jones. I mean, that's not, you know.
Sure.
Martin A. Lee wrote it.
Uh-huh.
There Will Be Done. It's quite interesting.
Yeah, well, I'm interested to take a look at it, Anna.
Okay, great.
Yeah, send it to me.
And you know that 20 million people lost their lives in Russia when the fascists invaded Russia.
Yeah.
And I think maybe when they set up the Eastern Bloc, it was to protect themselves. Twice people were trying to invade them from the West.
Oh, sure. And before that, they had the Mongol hordes. I mean, you know, going back 1,000 years. Absolutely. The Russians have this incredible victim mentality associated with it. By the way, the information about the Knights of Malta and all that stuff, instead of emailing it to me, much better, if you want to make sure that I get it and I read it, is post it as a comment on today's blog at tomhartman.com, because I do read those every day.
Well, you can look this up yourself on, at, in Mother Jones, 1983.
Okay.
July 1983 issue. I had them republish it one time, but they didn't publish the pictures and everything.
Yeah.
Can I just send it to you, like, in snail mail?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, my postal address is on our website.
I know it is, and I've thought about doing this a lot of times. I mean, it's the same thing as Hitler. Hitler didn't do anything. He was most of the time in the mountains with his companion from the convent, Eva Braun.
Yeah.
And so it was like a bunch of people.
Well, he had the Thule Society, and there was this whole little cult bunch around.
No, I don't think there was a cult at all. I think there wasn't a cult. I don't think he had any. I remember. I'm 73. So.
Yeah, Annie, a book that you would probably just love is called Hitler Black Magician. Which lays out.
Well, that was kind of a cover story. He fought in the Second World War. If you go back to the Holy Roman Empire, you'll see all of this propaganda brought forward to the New Right before the First World War, brought forward to the New Right again before the Second World War.
And it's coming back around again. Anna, we're out of time, but thank you very much for sharing that with us. We'll be right back.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, it's Tom Hartman. Guys, I know how easy it is to get wrapped up in everyday life and you just flat out ignore your health. I hate to point out the obvious, but sometimes we need to be reminded that without our health, life as we know it becomes extremely difficult. Let me take a few seconds to talk about prostate health and how this small gland can lead to big problems if you ignore it. The classic signs of an unhealthy prostate include the following: difficulty urinating, frequent night bathroom trips, and even sexual dysfunction. Unfortunately, every man will have some sort of prostate-related health issue if he lives long enough. And we all should, right? You should visit your doctor for regular checkups and take Beta Prostate to support proper prostate function. Ignoring your prostate will not make your problems go away. Beta Prostate provides effective, all-natural support. Call and order Beta Prostate risk-free today. Dial 1-800-954-0803. Your satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. Dial 1-800-954-0803. That's 1-800-954-0803.
track or an attitude. The ones that matter most.
Defending America from the weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman here with you. Our quote for the day from Thomas Jefferson. War is an instrument entirely inefficient toward redressing wrong and multiplies instead of indemnifying losses. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Mike in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Mike, thanks for calling. What's up?
Oh, hello, Tom. I had called originally to discuss the news that broke yesterday on KPOJ about how Greg Craig's office had essentially announced that they were going to respect Karl Rove's claims of executive privilege and essentially turn the page on the crimes of the Bush administration without doing anything about
it. Yeah, after I talked with Ellen about that, I went back and I read the article, the CBS report, and it was far more ambiguous than that. I mean, but you're right. They are not.
They're on that ambiguity because their preference is to have us let it go because they have so much on their plate now. But I did call the White House yesterday about this, and I'm encouraging everybody else within the sound of my voice to do just that, to let the president know that, well, for one thing, if you're worried about political blowback, political retaliation from the right, we've got your back.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll support this. And secondly, this isn't your call to make. This is a constitutional duty. Crimes have been committed. They have to be investigated. The investigation needs to go wherever it will. And that's inevitably going to lead to a whole lot of Bush people in orange jumpsuits at Leavenworth.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree, Mike, and we can't sacrifice the Constitution on the altar of expediency or on the altar of, gee, this president would like to have some, you know, his butt covered, too, which, you know, is, frankly, I think what Gerry Ford was doing when he was pardoning Nixon and maybe even what Clinton was doing when he was saying, we're not going to look into the crimes committed by the Reagan and Bush presidencies before him with regard to Iran-Contra, even though the evidence was so obvious, or not just Iran-Contra, BCCI as well. All that stuff, Clinton just stopped those investigations dead in their tracks because they might have led to the top.
Those are precisely the precedents that enabled the Bush crime family to get away with what it has done, going back to Gerald Ford. So my message to the White House, and I think it should be all our message to the White House, we voted for you because of the audacity of hope. Now we're hoping for audacity.
There you go. Well said, Mike. Well said. And good on you for calling the White House. Thank you very much. David in San Francisco. Hey, David, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. Greetings. You know, I told your screener I was interested in the there's sort of an economic formula that you could say about, you know, the old expression about shooting the messenger,
mm-hmm.
killing the messenger. Well, you know, the people that are opposed to fairness, you know, and I urge people to talk about the fairness doctrine, especially the neocons, are anti-fairness. But in real terms, shooting the messenger has always been a very dangerous thing. You know, if you were the messenger of one king and you're going to deliver bad news to another king, it was quite likely you'd either end up in a dungeon somewhere or you'd end up dead. And that's where the expression came from,
right.
Killing the messenger. Well, now, if you put that in economic terms, we've just had 8 years of lying, cajoling, murderous economics. You know, death economics.
We've actually had 28 years of it. It reached a crescendo in the last 8 years.
Yeah, I won't dispute that. Yeah, absolutely. And so with that in mind, fairness in media has to do with the real messengers being able to get out there and discuss the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole idea of whether or not the corporations that have been cashing in on you know, this lying, murderous regime of sweatshops and pollution and bad economics completely default, crush your opposition, and leave homeless and death in its wake. Obviously, a new media being able to discuss the real problems is not economically cost effective. The major corporations can't invest in the truth. They have to kill the truth. And with this stimulus package, it's kind of interesting. We've had an opportunity to be able to spend money on the truth and create a new dynamic, a new ability to save the planet or to have, redistribute the land to By the way, do you expect to do any interviews with Francis Moore LePay? And
Frankie has been on our show a number of times. We spent a week together in Croatia, and she was on our show almost every day with along with Tom. Tom Hayden, excuse me.
Oh, good.
Well,
the whole idea of she's, you know, in her famous book Food First, she's always talked about the idea that corporations that manage the land usually only use about 15% of the land. 85% of the land goes unused, and so they kick millions of people off the land, and then in order to control supply and demand of food, they limit the amount of growth, and so there's starvation while they keep the prices of food high. And this goes back way before Caesar. And so this whole idea of being able to get land back into the hands of people so that they can control their own food source is a major aspect of keeping a civilization alive.
Yeah. I agree, David. In fact, let me take it a step beyond that. And this is that in many neighborhoods, in many communities, in many cities in the United States, it is illegal. It's against zoning laws to grow vegetables in your front yard. And I can tell you, when I lived in Germany, where they suffered famines and they saw how bad it was during World War II, in the small town Stadtstanach where I lived, I would guess probably half the houses in that town had really huge vegetable gardens instead of a front yard, just as a starting point, and not to mention community gardens. Coming up tomorrow, we're going to have Dr. David Corton speaking of how to make an economy that works, an agenda for a new economy from Phantom Wealth to Real Wealth. David has a new book coming out, and always great to have him on the show. Plus, Christy Harvey's going to drop by from the Center for American Progress, and the best of the rest of the news and your calls. Don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Call the White House and tell them, prosecute Rove. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.